Thank you for joining me on Lifetime Oath. My name is Rich Bennett, Marine Corps veteran. And on this podcast, I am going to talk to active military, veterans, police officers, firefighters, anybody that's basically taking the oath to serve, support, defend. And there's a couple reasons I'm doing this. Number one, a lot of people that want to join the military, they don't really know who to talk to. A lot of times they talk to people that have never served. Those people really can't give good advice to somebody who wants to join the military if they themselves have never served. The other reason I want to do it is because there's a lot of us that have served that have gone through some problems, whether it be PTSD or something else, and they're not comfortable talking to other people or doctors, but they are okay talking to veterans. And that's another reason I'm doing it. The other reason, the third and final reason, is I want everybody to hear the stories. A lot of people have a lot of great stories from the time they served and the time they are serving. Unfortunately, people ask the wrong questions. So we are going to talk to all these active military veterans, police officers, firefighters, and so forth. And you can listen to their stories and get some of their advice. And on the first episode, Veterans Day, November 11th, 2020. I am fortunate enough to have a friend that I met through podcast, and he lives out in Texas, Army veteran Chris Greenfield. I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me, according to regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So help me God. Today we're sitting here with actually a friend of mine that I met through Facebook through the other podcast. Still have to get his coffee. I got to try it. But Army veteran Chris Greenfield is joining us today. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great this morning, Richard. How are you?
Good. Now, before we start talking about your time in the military, tell us about your business. First of all, give yourself a plug, man. Go ahead. Why not?
Awesome. Thank you very much. So one of my things I've got going on right now is I run Roasters Marketplace. It's an online specialty coffee store where I feature small batch coffee roasters from all over the country. Currently, we have 31 or 32 different roasters all over the country up on my website. Wow. I've got probably another dozen waiting on me to get their coffee up. We've got over 300 different coffee choices. It's basically an online marketplace for really small batch coffee roasters that you would only typically find in your local, farmer's market on the weekend.
Right.
I'm giving them a more convenient place to host their coffee, that gives them more national attention.
Well, that explains how you get so many different roasters on your podcast
then. All the time.
Wow. Now, do you have your own shop as well?
Nope. I run everything out of my office. What you're seeing, what everybody else can't see, is my in-office studio that I've got set up.
Okay. Because that's one of the things, after watching your podcast and listening to it, because I've done both, I'm amazed at these roasters. And I've been looking, it's like, oh man, I wouldn't mind roasting my own, but I wouldn't have a clue. I think it'd be easier for me to brew beer than to roast coffee.
Isn't it cool? You know, when I was introduced to small batch specialty coffee, I was blown away that one, you could do it at home if you had the right equipment, but the quality of coffee that these guys and these ladies are producing and you know, some of them don't even have a shop. Some of them are renting time on a different machine, or some of them have got their garage set up, or converted a room in their house to roast coffee. And it's just like brewing beer, in the sense that if you have all the equipment and you know what you're doing, you can make some really, really good stuff at home. And that's kind of why I fell into it. I was like, well, this is cool. This is way better than grocery store coffee. And
oh, I bet.
And you get it 3 or 4 days after it's been roasted. If you order it, it's an awesome, awesome hobby. Once you get into it, but it's awesome to be able to sit down and have such a good product from people, you know.
Yeah. Well, tell everybody what the website is, so they, if they want to order coffee, they know where to go.
Roastersmarketplace.com. You can find us on the internet. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all over the place, YouTube. We've got 2 different channels. And then I've got the Common Grounds podcast as well, which is what you've listened to before.
Right. And people can find that
everywhere.
The link to the podcast on the same site.
Site. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify. You type in Meet Your Coffee Roaster, and I am going to be your number one hit.
Now, when you got out of the Army, you didn't get right into that, did you?
No.
Okay.
Definitely not.
All right. So, kind of fell into it by accident, I guess, right?
Yes, sir.
When did you join the military?
I joined the Army right out of high school, January of 2000. So I graduated in May of 1999, you know, last century, and took a couple months to figure out that, you know what, the local tech school I was going to was not what I needed at that point in time. And that was before, you know, global war on terror, everything kicked off. And I think Bill Clinton was still president when I signed up for the military.
What made you decide to go in?
I wasn't happy with where I was at, you know.
Right.
18-year-old kid out of high school, didn't really know what I was wanting to do. I knew that really small town. I live in Texas now, but I grew up in a really small rural town in Arkansas. You know, I graduated with 27 people. That was my
27
people in my high school graduating class. So you really had only a couple options, you know. You could go to the military. You could work at the, you know, you could do construction. You could work at the local lime plant or chicken plant, or you went to school. And those options, I really didn't think about those local options. I didn't want to break my back, you know, working construction. And
yeah, I think I would have joined the military too. Yeah,
it was the easy way. I guess back then, easy way out for a kid who didn't have college money. You know, my parents couldn't pay for me to go to school.
But you're also doing something different that everybody else that was living in your town's not doing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
and the funny thing is, people, you know, you see the movies and everything about the small towns, but you're proof that stuff is true.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everybody works at the same plant or whatever.
I mean,
you know. Now, how long did you serve?
Almost 14 years. 13 years, 10 months, and 3 days, I believe.
I didn't realize you were in that long.
Oh, yeah, I was in for a bit.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, what, military discharge? Or you just decided that's enough and time to get out?
I decided that was enough and it was time to get out. I did 3 tours in Iraq. I spent over 38 months total in Iraq.
Wow.
My last tour, I did those 3 tours all with pretty much the same unit. I was in the same unit most of that time. And at the end of the third tour, they said, hey, you can do you've spent this much time in Iraq. You've done this many combat tours with the unit. We're going to get you where you want to go. And then about
after all that time, finally, yeah. Right.
And then about 3 weeks later, I got orders for drill sergeant school. And that was not where I wanted to go.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I didn't know. I'm way too laid back for that. And there. You know, I tried to get out of it. I looked at my different options. I looked at different areas. I had a lined up job that was going to be awesome, that I knew everybody in my chain of command on the NCO side I'd been either deployed with or had worked with previously. And they're like, nope, you're going to drill sergeant school. And so that is not a break. That is not time down.
No, that's hard work.
It's hard work. And at the end of that, you know, everything was creaking and aching and hurting. And I had been you know, in a relationship with my now wife for a few years, and she wasn't leaving Texas. And so right. I was like, okay, this is the time to get out. You know, my next duty station would have been, oh, you're back in the chute. You haven't been deployed for 2 years. You're going back overseas. Well, I was a drill sergeant for 2 years, you know?
It's, yeah.
So we made the decision for me to get out, and we got out, started school. Well, I was still technically active duty when I started college, and got married a few months later to my longtime fiance.
So what was your MOS when you were in, when you were over in Iraq?
When I originally joined the military in 2000, I signed up as the 92 Golf. I was a food service specialist.
Really?
I did that for about 3 years, which led me into my first tour into Iraq. And that year, that was OIF-2. And so that was 2004 mm-hmm. to 2005. And in that time, they already had Brown and Root doing all the cooking. There wasn't a job for that MOS. And right. so they're like, okay, if you don't have a job, these are your options. You can work supply here. You can do this. You can work at the DFAC, or if you want to, you can volunteer and do combat patrols with the different units. I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. I'll do that.
So you volunteered to do the combat patrols.
Correct.
Okay.
And so I did that for that full tour. And my window of reenlistment was fixing to open up when I was still in Iraq, and they were throwing a lot of money at people to
stay
in and to change from it to an MOS they needed. And so I right. switched over in 2004 to be a infantryman. And so
wow.
I came back. I already knew I'd pulled strings. I'd made really good contacts with the unit we were attached to. They were switching over. They were the Army was reorganizing back then, and we were doing what do they call it? They were combined force units, and so they took armor and infantry and stuck them together in the same unit. And so there was two companies of tanks, two companies of infantry, and they were doing that whole reorganization. And we had done enough combat with. Attached to that unit that their sergeant major was able to pull some strings and get me over prior to ever going to infantry school. So I came back from Iraq and went right into an infantry unit.
Wait a minute. So you didn't go to infantry school?
I did. After about 9 months of being in the infantry unit, I went to infantry school.
Isn't that kind of backwards?
Oh yeah. But I pulled some strings. They knew I was going to end up in that unit anyway.
Yeah.
My unit knew I was wanting to go over there. And so they basically just MTO'd me over and stuck me in infantry platoon.
Well, you didn't need infantry school. You had on-the-job training, man.
I didn't, but you had to check that block.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You got to check that block. And it was a nice 6 weeks, I think, is what I went through at that point, 6 or 8 weeks. I went into the tail end of it because I'd already had basic training and been in. I was a yeah. sergeant at that point in time with a combat patch.
So once you got into the infantry, did you find it more that you bonded with, you know, more of the people that you were serving with than your other MOS?
It was a different bond for sure. There was still a bond for, and I'm still friends with a couple of the guys that I deployed with, you know, as a cook, or there was a bunch of MOSs in that platoon. But it was definitely different. It was definitely the support from being on the support side to being on the combat arms side, definitely different. And just yeah. everywhere you go at that point, it was kind of like you were treated a little bit different depending on what crew you're running with, you know?
Yeah. That's one of the things I liked about, you know, when I was it's you always hear that term brotherhood. And those that don't go in really don't understand it. But I found it. Well, and now it's brotherhood and sisterhood. But I don't know. Just for me, it seemed like those that served in the infantry had more of that brotherhood than other units for some reason. And I guess because you're out there, whether in the foxhole or whatever in the trenches, and you have that guy right next to you, you have to have each other's back.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it just makes that bond stronger.
And it kind of depends on, it does depend on your your local culture. I'm going to say that your unit culture a little bit, but you know, most of everybody that was in the same rank or below, like all the NCOs, right, in my unit, mm-hmm. it pretty much were on a first name basis with each other at work.
Yeah.
You know,
or nickname. Yeah.
I'm not calling the privates and my guys by their first name. No. Maybe at the end of deployment when we've been blown up a couple times together and shared those shared experiences. But, you know, I can go back and remember the first time my first sergeant called me by my first name. Like that was, you know, you transitioned into a different level because that was a respect thing. That was,
yeah.
You know, I spent my whole entire time as infantry in that one unit. So, but I know from my other buddies that I served with on the drill sergeant trail, we're the same way. You know, if they were infantry, yeah. we were first name basis, as long as there wasn't Joe around. And that wasn't the same thing or the same way with most of the other MOSs or the non-combat guys or gals.
Yeah. So what was your rank when you got out? E7?
Staff sergeant. I was
Staff E6. Sergeant. E6. Okay. And that's 13 and a half years. Not bad.
I probably could have put in my packet for being a sergeant first class my first year on the,
right.
like in 2010, but I knew I was getting out. Like it was we had determined that I was getting out before I even got on the trail, you know, like 3 years before I reenlisted for 6 years, a 6 year contract. And I knew I was getting out. So
yeah,
kind of passed up that sergeant first class promotion. So I didn't have anything else holding me in.
So when you got out, how long did they keep calling you or mailing you or whatever?
Oh, not at that point. I got out. They were starting downsize in 2013.
Okay.
They were starting to kind of cut back a little bit with the previous administration.
Okay.
But I had the National Guard call me up a couple times and I was like, no, leave me alone.
I'm done.
I'm good. You're not going to give me anything that I don't already have.
Yeah. Now, cause I end up doing this a lot. Do you ever kick yourself in the tail for not getting that full 20 years in to retire?
You know, I've got all my stuff squared away through the VA. So
right, that's good.
You know, I'm taken care of there to a certain extent. I really don't think, you know, I'd still be, well, 2020, I'd be, if they let me out at 20 years, I would have just retired.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, my wife probably wouldn't have stayed with me if I'd stayed in, you know, she's based here in Houston. There's not a job for her anywhere I would go in the military for her to do what she's going to do. And so that would have been a whole different lifestyle.
I was going to say, and that's got to be hard for spouses, especially, you know, when the other one's over in Iraq or whatever.
Oh yeah. For sure.
I don't see how a lot of these men and women did that.
That's why the divorce rate's so high.
Yeah, you're right. And which is sad. So any advice if somebody, because I'm sure you've had young people talking to you about the military.
I've had a few, and I've talked at schools before. So I've set in, I've done two or three different talks at the local college here, the 2 year school that I went to get my associate's degree from. I did a couple speaking engagements with them.
What's some of the questions that they're asking you?
Oh, it's the typical ones, you know, like what, where did you go? What did you do? You know, what did you see? But, you know, one of the biggest things for like, you know, what do I need to do? What do I want to do? Now, I had an awesome time being infantry. I mean, that was, you know, I went in with a job that I thought I was going to want to do. I thought I was, you know, I loved cooking. I'd went to culinary school prior to going into the military for a little bit. And I thought that's what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a chef. And I learned very quickly in the military that I did not want to do food service professionally at all. I'll cook for my family and my friends all day long, but I'm not doing it as a job. But I would advise a young person, if they were looking to join the military, to find a job that's going to give you a useful skill when you get out. The guys that go in, the guys and girls that go in the medical field, you know, x-ray tech, stuff like that, they're getting trained to do a pretty good paying job when they get out.
When they get out.
Aircraft mechanic, you know, even the heavy wheel mechanic, the diesel mechanics, they make good money when they get out, or can make good money when they get out, especially if they're doing contracting or whatever. The IT jobs that there are now, I don't even know what there's out there at this point, but I have friends that I've made after the military that they were IT their whole time in the military, and now they're doing it on the civilian side, and the military paid for all their training while they were in, and then anything they've got after is just, okay, I'm going to spend my GI Bill getting my master's or getting this extra cert, you know, for it. And so I would definitely say find a job that will give you a useful skill when you get out.
Great on the job training in the military. The best. That's for sure.
And employers definitely do look at that.
Oh, without a doubt. And I've tried to tell my nephew and a couple other people that, and they're like, well, how do they know? I said, they do. I said, and even if you don't go in, all the jobs that you've had prior, employers look at as well.
But
the thing is, employers, if you do your time in the military, employers, I think, are, they wanted to hire somebody that served quicker because of the motivation and the discipline. Discipline being the key word there. If you served, you have your discipline. And that's something that's, you know, lacking in a lot of workplaces.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Leadership skills is one of the big ones, especially if you're looking at, you know, if you did a while and you get out, you've went to some sort of leadership school, or you've had people, you know, below you that you managed, management skills, time management. It's all comes from the military, and employers do look for that. You know, they definitely do look for that. When I got out of college and started looking at the job market there for a little while, all the interviews that I was looking at getting into, that's what they focused on. You know, what were your leadership skills? What did you do in the military that pertained to what you were trying to interview for? And so when you're interviewing for some tech jobs and they look at your background and your infantry, they're like, well, how does that really, you know, how does that really transfer over? I was like, well, I'm teachable. How about that?
Yeah. You know? I'll never forget one of the first interviews I went on when I got out. I didn't put down that I was in the Marine Corps, and I got the job still, but it was like a month in, and my supervisor came to me. He said, how come you never, you know, during the interview, you never on your resume and you didn't say anything that you served in the Marine Corps? He said, why didn't you say that? I said, I don't know. I figured you probably frowned upon that. He said, no. He said, number one, if you would have put that on there, we would have known, okay, this guy's freshly out. We want to keep him because if he gets a government job, he's going to get that higher pay grade. I was like, oh, I said, I never thought about a government job. It's like, oh, well. But and actually, it's with what we did, the infantry. What are you going to do when you get out besides police?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I mean, as far as a career like that. But you brought up a good point with when it comes to leadership. I think in the infantry, if you're a platoon leader, squad leader, whatever, because of all the stress you're under, that what better leadership is there? If you can handle that and handle them guys under you. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, I don't know why a lot of them look at it and say, well, officer probably knows more. Well, no, not necessarily.
Yeah.
What was the old saying? You know, we work for the non-commissioned officers work for a living.
Yeah, we work for a living. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is true, though, when you get out, because I've got a bunch of buddies that were, you know, officers when they were in. One of my really good friends here locally that I still talk to all the time. He was you know, he was a platoon leader for a while, got out, was a battle captain, or he didn't get out. He went, finished his platoon leader time, went to be a battle captain. So he was running, you know, battalion size operations from the operations center. And so when he transitioned over, I mean, he was right into project management, because that was what he, you know, that was his background, was project management of a bunch of little stickers on a board, moving them around, making sure they were going the right place, you know? But it's definitely looked at differently depending on what level you're at. You know, platoon sergeant, definitely running 36 guys around, making sure everybody got where they're going. Platoon leader, really good leadership experience. Squad leader, my time on the trail when I was a drill sergeant, you know, doing the training aspect was awesome. I really enjoyed that. The admin side of the house got me used to doing, you know, Excel spreadsheets, all that side of the tracking, different systems in that side. You know, I'd never had my own email address that actually needed to get email when I was in the infantry, but when I was drill sergeant, that was really important, was running the admin side of the house and coordination. So that was good that I picked that up on the inside, the end part of my tour.
Right.
And was able to do a lot more with it.
Yeah, I bet I would like to do a study. I bet because of all those skills you just said you learned, I'd like to find out how many people that got out of the military became successful entrepreneurs. Because you think about it, what you just explained, the military can, it also trains you to more or less run your own business, because you need that discipline to run your own business. Let's face it.
Definitely.
You know, and some of those other skills, I'm going to have to do my research on that. That'd be interesting to find out. Cause I know I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs and they have served, but I know a lot that are business owners that never served.
You know, I think definitely that some of that definitely bleeds over on the logistics supply side, what you need, where you need it, the timelines, that planning, you know, and being able to know, hey, I need this set of things in place before I execute. But, you know, I wish I could go back to when I got out and choose a different path through college. Now that's another one I would have chose differently.
Yeah. I wish there's a lot of things I wish I could have changed, but I wish I would have stayed in. I would have retired. I would have retired a while ago. I ain't going to say how long ago, but either that or, so, and my mother was happy when I got out because, you know, she said, I'm glad you didn't make a career out of it because you might not be here today. It's like, but mom, that's why I joined in the first place. You know, I mean, I quit my senior year and joined the Marine Corps. Actually, I was supposed to join the Navy, came home with papers to join the Marine Corps. And I'm serious, man. And my father was in the Navy before, and I was 17. They were going to sign for me. And when I brought the papers home for the Marine Corps, he refused to sign, said no. He said, you'll never make it in the Marine Corps. He's going on and on. So after my 18th birthday, I think it was a few days later, I was down in Paris Island.
Nice.
Yeah. Loved it. Loved it. So Chris, I want to thank you so much for coming on it. The first episode, which is going to be, well, it's Veterans Day.
Awesome.
Perfect, man. Perfect.
Looking forward to it. Hit me up later and I'll give you two gentlemen that you need to talk to. One was my old company commander. He's got a book called Legion Rising out.
Ooh.
And then I've got another buddy that wrote one called The Beauty of a Darker Soul. You don't get to read a book for people that were actually killed in combat too many times. And he actually was, I think he was dead for 18 minutes before they brought him back. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Very good book. Very good book. He's got a couple TED Talks out there too.
All right, Chris. Thanks a lot, man.
I appreciate it. You have a great day.
If you need a roof, there's only one person to contact, Joe Ayler. Joe owns Tar Heel Construction Group. And when it comes to veterans, he looks out for us. So if you're active military, if you're a veteran, police officer, firefighter, And, you know, if you have taken that lifetime oath, give Joe Ayler a call at Tar Heel Construction Group, 410-638-7021. Again, that's 410-638-7021. And have them come out, give you a free estimate. Let me tell you something. When it comes to the work they do, it's amazing. Simply amazing. Roofing, roof repair, gutters, siding. Joe's the one to do it. Top rated, elite service with Home Advisor. They have gotten all types of awards. It's just amazing the stuff they do. And just to let you know, he did my roof. Put a new roof on, and I had estimates from several different companies. But what surprises me is when Joe came out to give me an estimate, and I didn't see this with a lot of roofers. I saw it with one other one. But Joe got up on my roof and actually looked at everything. I had two or three roofers just standing down there looking up at the roof trying to give me an estimate. And Joe explained to me, he said, they can't give you an estimate if they don't get up there and look at everything. Because, you know, I need a plywood replaced. They wouldn't have known that just from standing down there and looking. And their crew, oh my God. When Joe finished, there was not a nail to be found anywhere on the ground. Everything was spotless. And I mean spotless. They did a fantastic job. So again, call Tar Heel Construction Group, ask for Joe, and tell him you heard about him on Lifetime Oath. 410-638-7021 or go to tarheelconstructiongroup.com. Soon after the publication of American Sports Legends, Your Turn to Score, a reservist approached D.A. Jennings and mentioned that her book would be ideal for military members. He believed that servicemen and women could identify with the athletes who face challenges that appear insurmountable, but because of their perseverance and hard work, they triumph. With 32 years of civilian service within the Department of Army, the author was hooked on the idea. And I'm excited to say that she has agreed to partner with me on this podcast. And what we're going to do is on each episode, I am going to read a poem from this book. And there's a couple of things in here. So let me go ahead and explain the playbook to you. The objective is to identify five elements for each poem, whether it be sport, athlete, event, or date and place. The mythology is to extract clues from the titles and stanzas. Focus on closing lines to determine what the event is being featured. And apply your knowledge and submit your answers to me. What D.A. Jennings does, she has a military sponsor appreciation program. And she donates books to people in the military or veterans. And she has agreed to send a book to whoever wins on each episode. Of course, the first episode, we're reading the first poem, so we won't have a winner yet. But all you got to do is submit your answers to me at richbennett@danben.com. Again, that's richbennett@danben. That's danben.com. And, you know, of course, submit your address too so we can send it to you if you win. So, on to the first one. Assiduous. Cairo is a long way from Los Angeles. People can be hard and mean. They are. People may not like different. They don't. Listen to his soul and hear what he has to offer. Can his heart bear their bitterness? It has to. Will his tongue hold itself? It does, reluctantly. Japan closes one door and opens another. The army is good and bad. He handles it. Commissioned officers in the back of a bus? No way. Serves his country, comes home, told to play of his own kind. Who made up that rule? Rise above it. Don't like it? Stand in line. Dodges death threats, plays his game, and runs home as often as he can. 6 national pennants on the wall, 1 for the world. Only steals under certain situations. He does it often. Another's arm helps him break down the pigment barrier. No words. Let the whole country judge him as a man, not a color. 42 fulfills his personal legend and retires with honor
in a major way. If you know who we're talking about in the sport, go ahead and submit your answer. Again, email me, richbennett@danben.com. And we'll pick the winner on the next episode of Lifetime Oath.